You're listening to A Conduit's Diary. This is a podcast about me, Rachel, and my experiences as I investigate paranormal activity as a conduit. This is rated R for explicit because I do have a little bit of a foul mouth. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you listen to it. And here's episode 45, Renovations, Part 2.
This is a bad idea, Archie groaned, looking at the deserted strip mall in front of us. It was something out of a bad horror movie. The sun had long since bleached every surface in off-white color, causing most of the paint to peel. The parking lot itself was empty and cracked, with the lines no longer visible amongst the brambles and roots that clawed their way out. A lone sign stood near the entrance of the parking lot, with faded names no longer legible. This, too, was in disarray, with the placards long since rotted out. A faded "for sale" sign hung, swinging in the breeze, revealing a "for lease" sign under it. Even the parking lot was ominous. I half expected a tumbleweed to blow across it. This was the peak of suburban Phoenix life. On the outskirts sat many strip malls like this, with peeling paint and faded signs from a long time ago, a whole 20 years tops. This one looked like it once had a grocery store, maybe a few restaurants, some random shops. As Archie told it, the place never really popped off. Most of my ideas are, I agreed, leaning back in the passenger seat. Archie offered to drive us to the location he spoke about in our meeting. See episode 43, Renovations. He'd given me an address at our last meeting, but not the exact suite affected. I'm sure I could have figured it out, but something about having someone else there made me feel a little better. If I ever brought someone else into my job, it was usually Hema, and those few times I called my mother before she died. I'm not sure what help Archie could have as someone who couldn't see or speak to whatever was there, but having a giant tattooed man gave me a small amount of comfort.
So what's the plan? He asked.
He'd parked his work truck in the parking lot spots farthest away from the strip mall.
We go in, we see what's there, we get rid of it, I said.
Is it really that easy? He asked, hopefully. I shook my head. Usually not. Let's go. Archie took his sweet time getting out of the truck, leaving it parked far away from the buildings.
What if we need to make a quick exit? I asked, eyeing the truck. At least it was still winter and not spring or summer, where the sun meeting the asphalt would add another 10 degrees to the torment. Now it was just a cool winter breeze and the relentless winter sun.
Would being in the truck save us? Archie asked. I shot him a glare. You didn't mind having the option to bail last time, I reminded him.
I instantly regretted saying it because it was clear the words upset him. Instead of saying anything, he turned to the building, his gaze tracing over the many empty suites. Most of the suites had dark tint to prevent anyone from seeing in. It was necessary in the summer, where the sun itself could turn a room into a boiling box. Most of the tint was peeling and cracked. A few suites had nothing to protect its interior, and I wasn't surprised to see chairs with the plastic long since melted and warped. Last year's summer saw multiple days over 120 degrees, and with no air conditioning, these boxes were more like death boxes than suites.
Come on, let's go around the back, he said, nodding to the side of the long strip mall.
We turned around the corner to the back, which was littered with trash and turned over dumpsters. It was clear no one had used this in quite some time, not even squatters. We were two suites down when Archie slowed to a stop, nodding to a door. It looked much like the rest, a black metal door with the suite number painted on it. 143.
That's it, he said, shifting his weight.
The one your client had? I asked. He nodded, suddenly nervous.
You don't have to come, I told him. I'd done these things by myself plenty of times.
No, I told you about this place. I have to, he said. It was both stupid and kind of him to say, the type of thing men tended to say in movies. This wasn't a movie, this was real life. And I was currently standing in front of a very real, potentially haunted spot. Apparently, this was built in 1992, I told him. His head turned to look at me, eyebrows raised. I usually do some research before I go anywhere. Built in 1992, used to have a Smitty's grocery store. The other buildings around it came and went, but it sounds like in 2002 is when things really started going bad. Smitty's closed this location in 97, right before they really fell under. The stores around it stuck around until 2002, when suddenly everyone kind of vacated. I couldn't find a lot about the deaths. The internet wasn't what it is now, but in the 2010s I found a few in the area, including your client. Archie wasn't wrong about the history of deaths in the area. Most of them were attributed to workplace errors, construction workers falling during renovations, heart attacks or strokes on the job. If I didn't know what I was looking for, it would have seemed random, and the deaths would be underreported. All in all, I could find 24 instances of people who died either in the strip mall or within a few feet of it. It'd been about 3 years since the last death, mostly because no one had bothered to lease this for years. When COVID hit and brick-and-mortar shops suffered, this place went out with the trash, likely an easy way for the landlord to get rid of it. "Anything to explain what caused it?" he asked. I shrugged, taking a step forward to the door. Archie's hand reached out and grabbed my arm, stopping me from taking another step. "Think long and hard about this, Rachel. No one owns it. It could just get demolished. Maybe that will end it." "Or set it free," I suggested, though that seemed unlikely. The deaths were never central to one suite or the other. For some reason, whatever was in here picked this suite to operate out of. Why? I was missing something, and I needed all the details, especially if this had to do with that annoying-ass demon thing that hijacked my dream. It was nothing, if not petty. Archie loosened his grip enough for me to step up to the door, eyeing it up. "I don't suppose you have a key?" I asked. He grinned sheepishly, pulling one out of his pocket. "As long as it hasn't changed in the last few years, this should work." "You kept it?" I asked. He shrugged. I had a feeling I'd be coming back." That sounded ominous. I took the key and, to my surprise, the lock turned and the door opened. Inside was exactly what I expected. Empty, dirty, and warm. Arizona winters were notoriously warm, with the high today of 65. Inside a musty room that hadn't got air circulation in a few years, that meant warm, musty air. Archie found a rock near the door to keep it propped open in some attempt to get the air moving, or to give us a clear escape. The suite was in the midst of a renovation, just like Archie said. The room we stepped into was a partially finished office, with a stack of filing cabinets against the wall. A desk was against another wall, covered in a layer of dust and cobwebs. I pushed through the room and out the door, leading to the main area. Stairs climbed up the left side of the wall to a loft overhead, which was currently pitched in darkness. To the right was a partially demolished wall, an attempt to join two smaller suites into something larger. An ominous crossbeam stood over the wall opening, just high enough off the ground for a grown man to hang himself. I swallowed and looked away. I turned to look at Archie, who was pale under his tattoos. His eyes were wide as he glanced around the room, his hands rubbing together. "Are you sure?" I started. "Yes," he said, swallowing loudly. "Can you feel it?" I asked. I hated to admit I felt nothing, just dirty from the cobwebs and dust. I recalled the Black Widow spider nest that set up shop in my high school, leading to a series of bites that plagued my nightmares for weeks. What did a Black Widow nest even look like? How many bites would I need before I died a slow, painful death? "I need to stop reading R.L. Stine novels." Archie nodded, his eyes trailing up the staircase to the loft. "Okay, structural engineer, what's the likelihood of that thing falling on me as I go up?" I asked. "Pretty low," he admitted reluctantly. "Perfect. I assume that's where the bad juju is coming from?" He nodded. "Then up I go." Archie stood at the bottom of the steps and watched me as I took the metal staircase, one step at a time. Each stair squeaked with rusted hinges and loose screws, but I trusted if I fell, Archie would catch me. I wasn't a small woman, but thankfully, Archie was a big dude. The top of the stairs opened to a loft, which was an odd thing to have in a suite like this. The loft was clearly built into what was once the ceiling, meaning it easily cost a fortune to put in. It was small, no larger than 7 by 10 feet, with low ceilings. I had no idea what they wanted to use it for. It seemed so impractical. I crossed the floor and peered into every dark corner, seeing nothing. With a sigh, I headed back down the steps, shrugging at the base. "Nothing," I told Archie. "Good," he replied. "Not good. We drove all the way out here. I need to see what this thing is," I told him. I crossed the floor to pass under the crossbeam and through the open wall when the image hit me like a load of bricks. A man standing on a chair, his eyes unfocused, something behind him, egging him on. The man on the chair placed something around his neck, a rope, and the image stopped abruptly. "Rachel, are you okay?" Archie asked. His hands were closed on my upper arms, keeping me upright. "Yeah, I just saw." I trailed off, looking up at the crossbeam before shaking my head. "Whatever is in here, it's left a deep imprint. I'm not sure if it's mad or if it has an agenda, but it's left breadcrumbs." Archie said nothing as he followed me into the other suite. This one looked even more unfinished than the first. Cubicles stood half erected, either in the process of being put up or torn down. Some of the chairs had melted, their plastic seats dripping like wax and frozen with time. The wooden desks were moth-eaten, most of them broken in various places. I was surprised no teens had tried to loot the place or used it for destruction. I had taken 2 whole steps into the room when another image stalked me in my tracks. In the middle of the floor, I saw a fire. Next to it, a woman covering herself in gasoline. Behind her, something watched, encouraging her. Just like the man before, her eyes were waxy, unseeing, as she stepped into the flames. When the image subsided, I looked up. The tiles overhead were new compared to the others, less yellowed, though I could see some dark black staining along the white beams in between them. "Fuck," I hissed. "What?" Archie said, his gaze darting around the room like a hunted animal. "I suppose we were just that. Prey and some predator's lair." I had a suspicion it was watching us from the shadows, enjoying showing me bits and pieces of what it was capable of. "I just watched a woman light herself on fire. That's all," I replied, unable to keep the tremble from my voice. "Not too late to turn back." The thought came unbidden, a taunt. Great, now it was inside my head. Another few steps and another image hit me, this one older. It was a grown man wearing business clothes, his face set in a grim line. The room around him was different, aged. Gone were the cubicles, and instead there were a series of wooden desks with name placards on them. I couldn't make out the names, but I saw the letters after it. CPA. Accountants. He wasn't sitting at any of the desks. Instead, he was on the floor, holding a book in his hands. I couldn't see the name of the book, just that it was old and tattered. He sat cross-legged, drawing symbols on the ground in chalk, muttering to himself. I took a step closer, trying to hear the words he said. The memory, image, whatever, garbled his words. Clever. The thing didn't want me to know how to summon it, lest I figure out how to send it back. After a few moments of this, the man pulled a knife from his pile of things, running the sharp side of a blade down his thumb. He pressed his thumbprint to the middle of the chalk drawings, reciting more garbled words under his breath. "You'll pay for this," he hissed, the only audible, understandable words. From the center of his chalk drawing, a portal opened, and from it, something crawled out. The image abruptly ended. "All for a little revenge," I said with a sigh. "Revenge?" Archie asked. He was standing at the exact spot the man sat in my shown image just moments before, looking like he was about to be sick. "Yeah, this all started because some guy wanted revenge, so he opened a portal and let something in." I looked up, tracing my line of sight over the tiles of the ceiling. "So are you stuck here, or are you tasked? Come on, don't be shy," I called into the rafters. What are you doing? Archie asked, sucking in a breath. I want this stupid thing to stop toying with me and show itself, I told him.
I've always wanted to meet a conduit,
came a voice from the rafters, melodic and sing-song. I'm not sure if Archie heard it, or if the sudden appearance of the thing changed the frequency of which he was in tune to, but he jerked his head in direction of the sound. Sounds like your lucky day, I called back.
And with a clairvoyant,
the voice continued, shifting overhead. I could hear it move between the tiles of the ceiling, clinking over them as it did so. It was clumsy, whatever it was, likely because it hadn't been able to feed off people for a few years. Whether it used their deaths or their emotions, I wasn't sure, but I wasn't about to let it leech off me. It says you're a clairvoyant, I told Archie. His eyebrows shot up. I thought that means you can, like, tell the future. I shrugged. Whatever, it's what it called you. Hey, what do we call you? I asked the thing as it continued to dart across the ceiling, just beyond the tiles like an angry cat.
Nice try, it said.
It paused at the edge of the ceiling, near the beam that separated the suites. It's common courtesy to introduce yourself when you meet someone new, I told it.
Well, you are no stranger to me, Conduit, and I've scented your friend before.
Gross. Yes, yes, I'm very famous and well known amongst you things. Why don't you come down from your little hiding place and get a closer look? I asked. Archie's wide eyes darted to mine as he shook his head rapidly back and forth.
I think I will,
it said after a pause. From the gap between the buildings, it slid down, a disjointed body of smoke and sinew. It was like watching water leak from the gap, reforming into a silhouette once it landed. It kept to the shadows, moving jerkily as it slid along the edges of the wall.
Please tell me you see that, Archie groaned.
I nodded, not willing to take my eyes off the thing. It may be sticking to the shadows now, but how long until it made its move? I'd seen something like this a time or two before. They were often summoned for revenge, some strange beings that were drawn to anger. Historically, they were used to destroy someone's business by scaring the patrons away or making all the food go bad. I'd never seen one stick around for so long, especially after all the businesses were long gone. They had many names, mostly related to the Egyptian goddess Sekhmet, because of her role with vengeance. They predated her, but the association stuck. You've stuck around quite a while, I told it, my gaze never leaving its wispy form as it clung to the walls. It didn't respond, pausing only a moment as if to consider what I'd said before it continued its journey along the edges of the walls. Seems like a long time for a simple summoning, I added.
Until he's dead, I continue on, it replied quickly, too quickly.
It was angry. I could set you free, I offered. It laughed, a sound more like scraping nails on cement than anything else.
Back to my world. I think not, Conduit. Just because I'm here doesn't mean I don't know what goes on there.
I hear it's not so bad. Not nearly as hot as Phoenix, I offered. It moved quickly, sliding through the shadows to stop a foot in front of me. Archie stumbled back. I held my ground. The swirling shadow where its face would be curled in joy at his reaction. Its attention locked on Archie. I think the fuck not.
Let me guess. You're low on the totem pole. You know going back there means you'll be stuck doing some stupid shit until you get summoned again, I asked it. You're so simple, it growled in response, finally turning its attention back to me. Do you think this is about pride? Stupid shit. As if it's all about power and positioning. Did you ever think to ask why most of us have chosen to stay on this side? We're at the mercy of a simple child like you.
Should I be happy you think I'm young or upset you think I'm simple? I replied. It slunk closer, just an inch, but I noticed it. I always notice when they try to do these things. They were able to catch others off guard, but not me.
You'll be more upset when I take your friend, the little clairvoyant, it said to me, tilting its head slightly. Would you like to know what happens when I get to them?
I bury myself deep, so deep they don't realize I'm there. I talk to them, whisper to them, tell them to do things. Sometimes they know and try to stop me, try to drag me out of their conscious. It's too late by then. I've made my nest and I won't get out of it. That's what I'll do to your friend. I remember him from those years ago. He works in construction. I can think of so many things we can do to ruin his business and the lives of others. Let's leave a wire open to start a fire. Or perhaps we won't tighten something and cause a gas explosion. Oh, it would be such fun. And he'll be happy when I finally push him to his own death. Its voice pitched upward in glee, advancing another few inches. You're bluffing, I told it. Am I? It asked. Yes, I said, reaching out to grab it as it lunged for Archie. My fingers curled on smoke and nothingness, and it responded by jerking away, laughing. It didn't stop it from advancing on Archie. Now it was taking a more circuitous route to him. All or nothing. I threw my whole body at it, colliding with the disjointed mass of limbs and shadow. It wasn't expecting that. It cried and tried to pull itself from my grip. Instead, I tightened my arms around it, pulling it down and down. Down onto the floor and deeper, deeper still. I felt the slick sensation of the other side cover my body as we fell beyond my world and into its. It wailed in my ear and thrashed, trying to break my grip with anything it could. Claws, teeth, nails, anything it could use to pry itself free of me. We landed with a thud in its world. Now solid, it was able to slip from my grip, kicking away from me and skittering across the floor. We were in the suite, but on the other side, firmly beneath the waters that separated us. "You," it hissed, struggling to its feet. It sounded more afraid than angry, and I marveled at that. It would rather stay trapped, starving, in the human world than return here. I glanced up at the ceiling, seeing the outline of the portal that was created so many decades ago to summon it. The portal was closed now, locked from the outside. Clearly its own doing, an attempt to stay there and not here. "What are you so afraid of?" I asked it, genuinely concerned. "You'll know soon enough," it growled and returned. Before it could advance on me and drag me deeper into the side, I jumped, my fingers grasping my side. I scrambled my way through the ceiling and up the floor of my world, rolling onto my back to stare at the real ceiling. I'm not an athlete. Pulling myself up was not an easy task. Archie's concerned face hovered over me, his eyes wide. "Are you okay?" he asked. I nodded, catching my breath. "It's gone," he marveled, looking around the room. "It's so different here," he trailed off. He reached down and offered his hand to help me up. My fingers slipped through his, and he shook off the dark purple goo I'd felt all those weeks ago. It was all over my hands from where I'd held on as I pulled myself through to our side. "What is this?" he asked, shaking it off. "No idea. Kind of a new thing," I told him. "Hey, Rachel," he said as we exited the back door of the suite and closed it behind us. "Yeah?" I asked. "I think I'm going to leave the ghost hunting to you. I'm not cut out for it," he said. I smiled and patted him on the shoulder. "I prefer to work alone anyway," I told him. "Do you have a choice?" he asked. I thought back to all the choices I did have. Calling Tony back and apologizing, taking Hema with me, getting closer to my mother and doing this with her. I shook my head instead, giving him a sad smile. "Not really, but it could be worse." "How?" he asked. "I have no idea."
A Conduit's Diary is created by me, written and produced by me, mixed horribly and edited by me. Cover art created by BMC Design on Fiverr. Music, intro and outro created by Chris Hornberger.